Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's January 17th, 2017, and I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 in the Good Beer City. We've got some special friends here from Asheville, North Carolina. All right, guys. Woo! We'd like to welcome Doug and Jazz Reiser. You guys, how are you doing? All right?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks
Tim,
for having us.
Tim Gormley.
Hello.
JT Murrett.
Howdy.
And our pal Josh Bernstein is also back in the studio.
Howdy.
All right. Big shout out to Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers, who are our sponsors. And you can check us on Instagram and Twitter at beer_sessions. I think Miguel, the beer tracker, is going to be taking some photos today. If not, you can follow at Burial Beer on Instagram. You guys might be posting too. It's actually the afternoon. We'll be, you can hear us, we'll be going live at 5 o'clock. But this is a pretty cool show. So, Josh, give us a little background on Asheville, North Carolina, and what the beer scene's like.
You know, Asheville's always been a fantastic art city, and then the art city and sort of the culture and music has really been complemented in the last decade or so by a really ascendant beer scene. You saw it kind of start organically with people like Pisgah, and then... I'm blanking on everything. Green Man. Yep, all those ones before. And then over the last few years, you saw the bigger breweries come in, like Sierra Nevada, you saw New Belgium, you see Oscar Blues outside. But that's also been complemented by this like really amazing wave of breweries focusing on everything from IPAs at Wicked Weed to Burial, which really rocks it out. Farmhouse beers, you have IPAs, and then what we're drinking today, a Kolsch.
Nice. So how did you guys come together? You guys, like, meeting you in person, I feel like this is kind of like the cool characters that made a great rock band. You know, you guys each have a personality.
You got it right.
And tell us how this band came together. How did you stay together and how you kept growing? Because a lot of times bands break up. That's kind of dorky. I'm trying to do a little journalistic
introduction. Yeah, no, it's great.
It works.
How's that, Josh?
Well, Doug and I met 13 years ago in college and kind of made our way to different parts of the country, ending up in Seattle about, I guess, 10 years ago, which is where we met Tim soon after we moved there. Tim's from Pennsylvania. And the three of us just, got together. Tim had already kind of made his transition into craft beer from Macros, and Doug and I were still kind of in that throw from living in New Orleans, which had zero craft beer 10 years ago. And so we just would get together and do like an IPA night or, a stout night. And we just kind of started to become more involved in the craft beer community. We started writing a blog. And at some point, I don't really have a specific moment or day, but we just all realized that, we would regret it for the rest of our lives if we didn't open a brewery. And so that was probably 3 years before we actually moved from Seattle is when the three of us decided to open a brewery.
So what attracted you to Asheville?
Well, there you go. Different voice.
A heck of a lot of things. You know, it started with Tim.
Doug, this is Doug.
This is Doug. Softly. This is Doug. A lot of things. You know, Jess and I had our first baby Axel, who was born in 2011, and we were sick of taking red eyes to go see grandma and grandpa and just thinking ahead and looking at life ahead and being like, Jesus, man, it's going to really suck for our kid to not know it's his family members. And decided it was time to go back east, and Tim had visited Asheville to go see a friend and came back just absolutely gushing, absolutely in love with the scene and the arts, the music, the beer world that was blossoming at the time. I mean, this was the time of that first wave of Asheville brewers. Like Josh said, I remember him coming back talking about Pisgah and Wedge Brewing. Wedge was like the new up-and-comer at the time, in 2011. So this predates Wicked Weed, High Wire, Burial, Fauna Flora. So he came back gushing about it. We picked, what, seven cities? We're like, we're going to go mid-Atlantic. We're trying to keep a lot of sun because we had been in black Seattle for 6 years, and I was done with that. So we were like, we want a lot of sun, but we want really nice outdoors like we had in the Northwest. But we want some damn good people like we had down in New Orleans, and we had just an incredible culture of festivities down in New Orleans, and we wanted to kind of try to find a place that was as lively as that. So we picked seven cities. Asheville was the first one we visited based on his recommendation, and we made it about 24 hours in Asheville before we were like, well, we're moving here. So it was a pretty easy decision. I mean, it was the perfect cross-section of people, lively culture, arts, music, food, beverage, all the things that we loved about living in a metropolitan city. Those are the things that mattered to us. It wasn't about all the other factors. But being able to have a small enough community that we could make an impact in and know our neighbors and know the people we see at the grocery store and our kids feel like they were part of a real community. And so it was that perfect marriage of the great North or the outdoors like we had in the Northwest, the people that we knew in the South, and that small town environment that we really wanted for our kids.
So why did you guys open a brewery? I mean, everyone's open breweries, but why'd you open a brewery and not a bar or a cafe?
Well, when we were in Seattle...
This is Tim.
Hello, I am Tim. when we were in Seattle, like Jess kind of alluded to, we just kind of fell in love with the culture that we found in the beer world, whether that was through knowing owners of bars, craft beer bar, bartenders, brewers, brewery owners. That was just kind of the world that we fell into. And then Doug and I started home brewing, and I got a couple professional brewing gigs out there, and it just... I guess it kind of it allowed us to be a part of the culture that we wanted to be a part of on like basically a maximum scale where we could be creative, we could really make a name for ourselves.
Josh, when did you first meet these guys, the Burial guys?
Oh gosh, I took this really ill-fated road trip. I had this idea that my wife and I would take our 13-month-old daughter on this 10-day road trip from New York City to Asheville and Nashville. And so we got about 6 hours into it, and I was like, this is the worst idea ever.
And it was cold out. I remember it being snowy when you were in Asheville.
So we got to Asheville, and it was like, after all this stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I need to get something to drink. And so where do you go with the kid? And you go to breweries with the kids. We took our 13-month-old daughter down to the brewery, let her scream, do her stuff. And then, I met them. They had, it was Salt and Smoke the Brunch. Yeah. I think it's Sunday Brunch out there, too. And it's like a really cozy environment. I'm just hanging out with them, shooting the shit while kids run around and, you know, got to kind of decompress after the stupid idea to go on a road trip, which continued for eight more days.
So you guys started really small, though, too, right? So you kind of grew organically.
We did, yeah. We started on a one-barrel system. So that was June 2013. And Tim brewed on that system for a year and a half. And for that first year and a half, it was just the three of us. And then for the past, I guess, 2 years, we expanded at that space to a 10-barrel system, which then led to, you know, a few more employees. We were able to open our tap room 7 days a week instead of just being open 2 days a week where the three of us were bartending. So now we have, you know, started to grow a front of house staff, and we were able to purchase that building and the property, and it's about, what, a quarter of an acre?
It's almost a half an acre. Right?
And which is obviously fairly large for like an urban spot. So then it kind of just grew organically due to, you know, our hard work and just kind of dedication to the community and getting to know the people that have supported us since day one.
Tim, what are operations like there? You're in Asheville. I mean, you have access to suppliers, yeast. You were talking about that before.
Yeah, we're super fortunate to be not that far away from Atlanta. So we have great suppliers for malt there that we can access malts from all over the world. Even in Asheville, there's one now. So kind of a distributor of malt and brewing supplies. White Labs is just right on the cusp of opening a new lab in Asheville, which is going to be huge for us. Just having, obviously, access and, you know, not having to pay huge prices for shipping, just having access to the lab, getting whatever random test we want to get, we can get right there. And just having so many other breweries around us to help out, you know, it's like if we're about to brew a beer and we realize last minute that we forgot to buy honey malt, we have like 25 other breweries that we can ask if they have an extra bag.
And I have no shame, and we'll ask all of them without hesitation. We also have a local maltster. We would be remiss to not mention Riverbend Malt. I mean, to have North Carolina grown 6-row, 2-row barley, wheat, and rye, as well as them sourcing some more regional products like the Seashore Rye that we did a beer with, that Tim did a beer with Revelry Brewing out of Charleston. So cool to be able to access that and have that grown in your backyard and say, hey, we make North Carolina beer with North Carolina products. And, you know, that's kind of a microcosm of the larger North Carolina agrarian world, where we have tons of fruits and vegetables that are at our grasp, but just well,
that's
by any
great.
Time.
We're just setting the tone for the show, and we'll talk about that. But just quick hi. It's TJ, right?
JT.
Yes.
I keep saying that.
Some people call me TJ. It's all right.
But, so you're like the new brewer, part of the brewing team?
Yeah, I came on as kind of like the first brewer hire for Tim. After the 10-barrel system got put in place, we got some 30-barrel tanks, and Tim was triple brewing into those 30-barrel tanks, and, you know, he was brewing by himself for so long, he just, you know, he can't physically do that. There's not that many hours in the day. So I came in to help him with that. And then we opened up our new production facility and started brewing there in October. So I moved from our original location, now the head production brewer of our new facility.
Well, that's awesome. It's nice meeting you guys. We're setting the stage. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll talk more about beer on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we got Burial Beer from Asheville, North Carolina here. How are you guys? Welcome back.
Rocking.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, we got Josh Bernstein. So we just had JT, the new brewer.
Do you mean TJ?
Yeah, TJ. Yeah. JT.
TJ or JT. They're just letters.
Tommy John. TJ.
So, you know, before we came on air, they were waiting for beer, and I said, Doug, you got beer? And you almost didn't have beer. What happened?
Oh, I mean, we only bring half of our brains when we leave Asheville, so we left it all in the hotel. Sadly, there's a hold. The good news is that everybody that sees us after this radio show will get beer handed to them. The bad news is Matt Lefkowitz from Union had to drive over here and drop off a case of this Kolsch. The good news is you got cold Kolsch, and that's better than warm Kolsch.
So Kolsch, so
there's a lot of
it's
positives.
A good beer.
So you guys are making a big bet on Kolsch. You know, these days, sometimes the lighter styles are not as easy to kind of sell. You know, it's double IPAs, this, Imperial, that, barrel age, whatever.
Especially in the middle of January.
Especially the middle of January. So, you know, what, you know, Kolsch, though. You guys did like a big, 60-barrel batch of this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We canned every single drip of it. You know, I would... just so this beer is like our first time that we all looked at each other and said, let's just make what the hell we want to make. And forever, you know, you kind of analyze the market tendencies. And we all, when you brew a beer and you're around it all the time and you're tasting out of tanks, you know, your palate is just washed with endless, you know, gunk, yeast and hops and everything. And at the end of the brew day, not that I can talk because I never brew, but
the theoretical
guys would say, yeah, at the end of my executive brewing
day, I like to crack open.
I executive brew pretty well. You can ask some of the local guys that I've executive brewed with, but at the end of the day, man, all you want is something light, refreshing. It's going to wash your palate and go down easy and not get you too drunk so you can hang out and socialize with your friends. When we came up with Billows, I was actually really hungover at Blind Tiger and was drinking a boat beer from Augie's Brewery and absolutely just loved what Kolschis did to my palate. I find this like great, like mild salinity almost to it and the sharpness of the sulfur. And I was like, man, I just want to make a Kolsch, but I want to add an American hop flair to it. I don't want to make a session IPA. I want to make a Kolsch with an American hop flair so that there's like a nice fruitiness to it and it kind of satisfies my desire for hops, but also treats me like a Kolsch.
Mm-hmm. You know, Josh, your new book is the complete IPA book.
Look at that. Plug.
I love your books, Josh.
Thank you, Jimmy.
So now we're drinking a Kolsch. Are there other American Kolsches that you would recommend? Because I think this one's pretty great. This is definitely a crush.
Wait, this one kind of falls in the line with like the modern taste right now. You know, we've kind of reached this point where you kind of have to add hops to almost everything. People are demanding hops, even in Kolsch, which is classically has a little bit of fruity characteristic from the yeast strain on there, crispness from the lagering on there. But, you know, you add some American hops on there, and it's like, it's a wonderful, beautiful beer on there. You know, for me, as other ones, you know, I tend to go for Pilsners more than Kolsches these days, which is just sort of, you know, I want that crisp zap, well, the refreshment. Like, locally, Threes, Vliet, is sort of the go-to one.
And is it a lager, or is it an ale, like a real Kolsch?
Technically, it is an ale. But we kind of treat it like it's a lager. It's a little bit cooler on the fermentation side. And then the longer you can give it cold conditioning, the more kind of clean it will be. I mean, we're drinking this beer out of a can right now. If you pour it into a glass, it's crystal clear. And that's what it's supposed to look like. But it also does aid in that like drinkability, like Doug was talking about. It's just a real crusher.
And what's it like having JT? He said a few
TJ?
Words before.
Yep.
TJ.
Yeah.
I'm going to play some more.
Yeah.
I'm not
going
to be able to shake it.
It sounds better now.
Yeah, sorry. What was the question?
You know, since you've come to the brewery, you know, what have you been able to add to them? Or, you know, what's different about
Jimmy's asking, how are you earning your paycheck?
JT went to school. The rest of us are art brewers. JT actually knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, I did. I did go to brew school out of Vermont. I have some brewing science that I was definitely able to bring to the table.
With the American Brewers?
American Brewers Guild, yep.
Right.
And then, honestly, I worked at Lagunitas. I did my apprenticeship at Lagunitas through the school. So definitely have a production background, and that's, I think, definitely helped us get our production facility up and running. The new 20-barrel, 4-vessel system, 60-barrel tanks.
It's a jump.
And then with you guys coming up here, so you're in New York City. We met you last year. You were at a party at Folk's Beer.
Yeah, what happened during that party? What was so special about that party last year? So we had a party at Folk's Beer, which is open at their tasting room in Brooklyn.
What was special about that party, man? That was amazing.
So we basically tried to get together a bunch of the New York City breweries, have a good warm welcome. Burial showed up, and then also a snowstorm did too. And this was the catastrophic snowstorm last year, basically the only snow we got in New York City. It's about 28, 29 inches. And then they looked outside after hanging out at the party, having a libation or two, and what did you think was the right move?
I had to crack another Mr. Bill Lowe's to tell the story because it's so haunting of a tale.
Haunting or harrowing? Or both?
Both combined times two. I mean, I'll start it, but I mean, in general, we walked outside and it was like there was snow starting to accumulate. Tim and I were like, we need to get home. We have beautiful women waiting for us back home.
But home is 10 hours away, not 10 minutes away.
Home is 10 to 11 hours away, driving full speed. And, you know, we basically We basically made a decision, like, if we don't leave now, we're not getting out.
It was now or never, we felt like, because we were going to get trapped in the city for at least a couple of days, we felt like. So
they risked their lives.
we decided to pull the trigger at probably midnight or something like that, because that's when it started to accumulate. And let's just say it was slow going. I think it took us about 22 hours or something like that to get home. And there was many, many parts of that drive where we were driving, moving, but we were not sure if we were even on the road. It was, we couldn't see.
Like, imagine the movie Mad Max, but if it was snow instead of sand.
So you guys,
that is what we saw the entire way home. It was trucks overturned and cars buried. We must have seen hundreds and hundreds of overturned
cars.
And
Justice, what did you tell them to do? Did they ask you?
Well, I was home in Asheville, and I do recall Doug alluding to the fact that it was because of me that he decided to make this, one might say, bad decision.
For the love of a good woman.
The other thing I want to add is that they didn't have anything in the car with them, no food or water, but they had two cases of beer.
Thank you, other half.
That's both, though. That's food and beer. This is like a rock and roll story, Josh. It's like Tim, Doug, and Jess. They hired a drummer.
There was like a few stops, like, for several hours where Tim and I are just like, I mean, we might as well have beer. I mean, at this point, right? What else? This is the only way we could get water into our bodies.
Also eating food.
Or the snow. Yes,
that's true. We got nourishment and hydration and dehydration at the same time.
So, but since you came up, and you've been up here before, so how many collaborations have you done? Name a couple of the New York City breweries you guys made collaborations with. Because you guys are making an impact. Everybody wants to work with you.
The first collab we did was with Other Half. It was fantastic. We made a Cascadian Dark Ale, something that meant a lot to Tim and I and Sam Richardson from Other Half, who grew up in Portland and brewed in Seattle as well. That same trip, we brewed a beer called NC1, made with black lemon and local sumac and honey.
To be released this
week. Which
with Transmitter, by the way.
I was about to say a mixed culture Saison made with Transmitter that we're going to release this week while we're up here, which is pretty awesome. It was made a year ago. And then we came back up in December? November.
November.
2 months ago, brewed an Imperial Stout that's now resting, I think, in cognac barrels with Other Half again, which was put on for our Christmas Tom Selleck party that we did down in Asheville, which was an amazing debacle.
And how many beers did you shotgun when you were up in New York City to brew that beer?
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks to Threes and Mickle and Josh and everybody else who forced those beers down my throat.
And beer bonging.
Beer bongs and shots. Don't hang out with Justin from Threes. It is just a bad idea. I want everyone to know that.
Justin Israelson.
Is our fourth trip, and we're brewing with Threes this week. So awesome. I want to make sure I say that.
So we're going to talk. You're here. You're doing a lot of things in New York City, but since we're talking about drinking and the cultures of drinking, tell us about what your tap rooms are like. You know, you've got a brewery. You have a tap room. What are the laws like in North Carolina? Can I go in there and get a pint? You know, what is your tap room like? What's your ethos? You guys doing giveaways, glassware, you know?
Yeah.
What's your tap room like in Asheville?
Well, because we started small, brewing-wise, our tap room was also very modest when we started.
Nicely.
So, you know, we believe in... The laws allow you to come, have a pint, have many pints, take beer to go. From a retail standpoint, North Carolina is a very liberal state with alcohol laws, which is great. Beer, anyway. Liquor's a little different. So for us, we kind of treat our tap room much like a European tavern, and like the history of why, you know, people kind of coming together over beer, people bringing their children, their grandparents, a place that
Their dogs.
A place that, you know, spans the whole community, and that it's not about coming and getting wasted. So this isn't like a nightlife kind of place. We close at 10.
So what role does food play with you guys? Because food's always sort of been a thing that's sort of gone hand in hand with what you've done at Burial at the Tap Room.
Yeah, so we finally were able to have permanent food through some finagling with, you know, city zoning and all that fun stuff. So Salt and Smoke, we partnered with a husband and wife team. They opened a permanent kitchen by way of purchasing a food trailer that we tacked onto the back of our building, because our building's too small to have a cooler in it, let alone a whole kitchen. And so they have been killing it. They opened in June. But prior to that, I mean, we've always drawn inspiration from culinary standpoints and, you know, adjuncts that we use in our beer and all of that. But yeah,
and you guys are in a very unique neighborhood in Asheville, South Slope. Used to be a former manufacturing warehouse district, which has sort of become the new hub for breweries, with Catawba's down there, Wicked Weeds down there.
You guys, Leaf,
the Tasty Beverage Company, and
yeah,
so
Bramari, tons. Yeah, it's definitely become a walk, like a beer tour, you know, via walking for sure.
And one of the key features of, I think, all those tap rooms is that you're in the brewery. And that's one of the coolest things I think people don't get to see in a lot of other brewery areas, is that, I mean, you walk into Burial, you're like on Tim's ass, you know. I mean, and sorry, Tim. I mean, he has to deal with that. But you know, you go into Twin Leaf, you go into Burial, you go into Catawba, you go into Bramari, High Wire, all those tap rooms. I mean, their brew houses are 3 feet away from where you're standing, so you get to see where the beer's made.
Yeah, and that's like a beautiful thing about craft, is that accessibility, you know, for the consumers to, you know, see that work in progress and see the people who are executing the product that they're then drinking, that whole like full circle kind of approach.
So tell us about some of your other beers. I only had your beers last year when you came up. You did those collaborations, but you know, we've got this Kolsch right now.
You know, a lot of Kolsch.
Yeah. What are the beers that are in demand that you're actually going to be sending to New York City eventually?
Shadowcock Pilsner all the time. The Pilsner. Just drink Pilsner. It's great. You should always drink Pilsner.
Well, Tim,
I have to pitch that one.
Tell me what you really think.
Yeah. I mean, we really aim to tackle a lot of different styles. We before we opened Burial, we took this kind of vision quest trip to Europe, spent a lot of time in Belgium, some time in France, Netherlands, Germany, got a lot of inspiration from that trip, kind of fell in love with the whole concept of farmhouse brewery in Wallonia and the surrounding areas, kind of tried to bring a lot of that back. We do make a lot of Belgian beers, not necessarily the biggest sellers all the time, but yeah, of course we love that. You come in a Burial tasting room and we have probably 3-4 saisons on. I love brewing saisons. I think it's like such a beautiful kind of canvas to make a lot of different variations with, use a lot of different cool adjuncts, local ingredients. Of course, we make a lot of IPAs because we love them, but also because everyone wants them.
And they sell. and it's a business.
Exactly.
Is there an Asheville style of beer, Josh? Or are they each guy's different?
I haven't been to Asheville like 8 months. I don't know. I mean, I would say there's things people come to Asheville seeking out. Like come to Wicked Weed and the lines are at the door to drink like really dank, like fresh, fragrant IPAs. You go to Oyster House, you get to sit back, drink a fun oyster stout and get some seafood. You go to Wedge, sit outside, you get a kind of classic mid-2000s pale ale and play horseshoes or something. So, I mean, I think Asheville, it's less about style-driven and more about environment-driven, I'd say, for all the breweries there. It's about the places you hang out at and less about sort of the, you know, one certain beer.
Yeah, it's funny. The only thing that didn't come up yet was our dark beers, and that's really what most people come to Burial for, is for the donut stout or the raspberry chocolate porter or the horchata brown or the coconut brown. We make a lot of dark beers that are very complex, difficult beers, and we put a lot of those in cans.
It was funny. The first time I went to Burial, they gave me a sampler of a bunch of the different beers out there. I was trying them all. Like, what do you think about this? And I'm like, it's okay. And now they're like, well, this is the one everyone loves, our Burial Skillet Stout. And I'm like, well, it's great.
Cool stuff.
Fantastic.
And quickly, so tell us, what are you guys doing in New York City? So quick itinerary. By the time the show's airing now, it's after 5 o'clock Tuesday.
We're living in the past, but it's airing in the future.
Where are you guys Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week in New York City?
Well, this is our launch week. So from this week on, Burial will be available, of course, you know, as available as it is until it sells and then the next shipment. But so tonight we are doing a split tap takeover at Haymaker. It starts at 6 p.m. and that's in the Fashion District.
Manhattan, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow night we have an event at Torst. They open at noon, so that's when they'll be tapping the beers. It's going to be 7 Burial taps, some canned beers as well. And that'll run all evening. We'll be there around 7 to say hi. Thursday is Threes, where it's a Boilermaker event. So we're kind of bringing our love of light beers, our Kolsch, our Pilsner, the collaboration we did with Threes Brewing at our brewery in July.
Both ways. IPL.
Which we can't wait to drink because we've been out of the tap room.
So light beers paired with a knockout shot.
Yeah, basically.
Like, here's the lightest beer you can drink paired with
and a couple of
whiskey.
Taps there. And then Friday.
Hey, we make beer for ourselves sometimes.
And we do events sometimes for ourselves. And then Friday is Proletariat, where it's Burial and Friends. So we have 6 draft beers going there, some bottles and cans, including our other half collab. I left my wallet at a Bed-Stuy juice bar, double dry hop, double IPA. And then we'll have our Transmitter collab there, as well as our Threes collab. And then those three breweries will also have kegs on tap. So.
Awesome. Hey, this is going to be a great week with Burial Beer in New York City. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We got the boys in the band right here. Jess, Tim, and Doug with JT on drums. Woo!
Yeah.
Josh Bernstein.
Woo!
The Burial Beer Band Tour. Jimmy's number 43 coming up.
Who's our roadie?
Yeah. Hey, and again, check us out, heritageradionetwork.org.
We start building a can pyramid.
I think I'm the roadie. And we got Justin Kennedy and David. So it's been a fun show. You guys are kicking back. It's a little different pace. It's like the North Carolina pace. But I want to circle back. We talked about, I said my buddy on Untapped, he's going to be disappointed because there's only one beer. It's the Billows Kolsch. But that's okay. We're mentioning the other beers. You can log them in. But you mentioned North Carolina malts and grains. Let's talk about the farm products that you're using. That's something that sets North Carolina apart from other states. So who wants – Doug, you want to keep talking about that?
Well, I'll start. I want Tim and JT can probably say more about it. But I do want to say you asked earlier, Josh, what's the Asheville style of beer? And I've been asked that question so many times. And trying to forecast what's ahead for Asheville is about as best as I can do. Or for North Carolina beer. And because of our vast agrarian culture there, and because of the success of breweries like Wicked Weed and Fauna Flora and humbly Burial, focusing on locally sourced farmhouse style beer, I think that is kind of the future of Asheville beer. People want what's local. People want to have a bit of the local terroir. And I'd be really angry at myself if I didn't say Zebulon. Zebulon Brewing is a great brewery owned by Mike Karnowski, who used to be at Green Man. He is doing stuff with spontaneous fermentation and native cultures to Asheville area. So I would just bring that up to kind of start the conversation that I do see Asheville beer kind of going that direction. And we do have just an immense array of not only native plants, but also kind of stuff that's been brought into the area.
Go ahead, John. I was going to say it's really interesting to me because we get a lot of beer that comes to New York City these days, but we get very little North Carolina beer. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so you're one of the first breweries to really make the leap and come to New York City and try to find your place. So I guess where do you see sort of Burial fitting in New York City, and why did not now seem like the right opportunity to really make a chance here?
Here we go.
Well,
no, I don't want to go.
You never know who's going to talk on the air. So,
well, first of all, I grew up in Brooklyn,
yeah.
So for us, new markets, and again, kind of relating it back to our start and the sense of community that we've built at our tap room, is something that we want to have in other markets. And obviously, New York is a giant city, but it is my hometown at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And so having that connection of community from the roots that I have here is something that was very important to us. You'll see Burial in the future in Philly.
I was going to say, if you asked that question about Philly, yeah, Tim would have answered it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. 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 So, and then someday Cleveland for Doug. That is really, this brewery is an extension of who we are and what we love and where we came from. And so this market is one of those facets. Finding a place here, having the friends that we have made here has certainly made that leap less intimidating. You know, Other Half, Threes, Transmitter, everybody else, that's just to name three, in this industry has been just, you know, again, community, right? It's part of the industry and part of why we love it so much. So
yeah, I mean, a big part of the reason you decide is because of where the hell you want to be. Like, mm-hmm, I want to be up here in New York. We used to live here. We love it. My favorite beer bars in the country are here. I'm not going to name them because I don't want to be prejudice, but
goodbeersteel.com. Wait, Tim, North Carolina Farms, ingredients, malt, grains.
Yeah. I was mentally prepared to answer that, and then I got thrown a curveball. And
swing bada bada.
You know, we were very fortunate to have this really cool organization called New Appalachia, which is basically a co-op of a lot of farms in Western North Carolina. So it's kind of like a single sales source for many, many farms. So we get this, now is, you know, we're a bit off season, of course, but we get throughout the spring, summer, and fall, we get these emails and basically just saying, these are all the things that we have available. Sometimes if we are specifically looking for something, we can kind of send it to them instead of having to really seek out every individual farm and figure out who's growing turmeric that we really want to use or whatever the case may be. So there is a huge amount of really cool farms, farmers, people that want to be in. I mean, Asheville is just such a collective type of a community. Like, everyone just wants to support each other. Everyone, you know, the whole like buy local thing is obviously, it's a national kind of craze, but it's not a craze in Asheville. It's life. It's just what we do. So the
malt facility that he mentioned, are people growing those grains also in North Carolina?
Yeah. I mean, one of the really interesting, cool things about Riverbend Malt is that they've made it part of their business model to use what is available in North Carolina. So they make, they're like, barley is six row, and which is kind of, you know, you don't see that as much these days. And a lot of craft breweries don't use six row, but they made it just this, that was what they could get. So they said, I'm going to find out a way to sell this to all the craft breweries around us. And it's just kind of one of those things where you just got to kind of educate yourself and trial and error, and you're going to figure out how to be successful with it. And, you know, they have a rye that's really incredible. They have a wheat that's really incredible. And it's...
Was that the Renza Bruzzi variety, one that was available from before the Civil War?
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. And then they just found this new seashore black rye, it's called, kind of on the coast of South Carolina, that, you know, there was like one farm that basically was like, holy crap, we found this rye that hasn't existed anywhere else. And it's kind of like a native variety to America. So Riverbend jumped on it and started malting it and selling it. And that, you know, this is just it's just such a cool part about the area that we live in, and allows us to make beers that do have that kind of terroir to them. This is a flavor. It's different. This is our flavor. And, you know, we're always kind of learning how to perfect it, how to make it work best for us, how to accentuate the beauty of it all. And that's like part of the fun of what we do every day.
Another question, Josh.
I was drinking.
Serious question time.
I was zoning out for a second.
You brought another beer. So for Untapped, we have another beer we can say.
Why not Untapped? I gave the bottle away, so I'm not going to have the name on there. But Coronado. Basically, we were talking earlier on at lunch how... the bottle's floating in by the ghost hand. Producer's ghost hand, Coronado North Island IPA. And the interesting thing about this, the reason I brought it in today, is because we talk about, you know, 5 years ago, East Coast IPAs were basically a bad word. No one cared about them at all. But now this rise of sort of softer, juicier, a little bitter, high tropical fruit flavor IPAs, which has sort of become synonymous with the Northeast and the East Coast, has become a buzzword everywhere you go. And so now we're finding a San Diego brewery, whereas 5 years ago, we really talked about West Coast IPAs as sort of the, you know, the zenith of what we thought IPAs could be. Nowadays, a San Diego brewery is calling their beer a New England-style India Pale Ale. Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating how quickly things are shifting in the landscape, that something that was basically a slur is now something, you know, an emblem of pride.
That's amazing. And Doug, so don't you wish you brought one of your IPAs now?
No, I got Mr. Bill Lowe's here. He's my best friend. He's the only friend I need.
Of course. So let's, okay, some more beer things, like your tap room and stuff. A couple of like things, like, what about waiting in line? You know, Josh, you said you might be doing a story. You know, we always talk about people lining up for cans at breweries and stuff.
I don't, you know, I'm not sure if that really, there's certain marketplaces bear that up. I'm not sure if that's really a phenomenon that's caught on so much in Asheville.
It does. For us, we are kind of selective about which release we want to organize that way. So the last one we did was on New Year's Eve, and we released the, I'll just call it Juice Bar collab with Other Half and Skillet Donut Stout. So we had fairly decent line. It was pretty chilly. Doug and I brought our fancy beverage machines from home, so our espresso maker and our juicer, and we made espresso shots and juice shots for everybody in line while they waited.
And these were can release?
Yeah, can releases. And so we, you know, certainly for folks when they do come out and they do wait in line, like, we're very humbled and gracious and, you know, certainly want to make it an experience, you know, as many people make it themselves, but we want to be a part of that with them for sure.
Yeah, I mean, an economy is a scale, right? I mean, Asheville's a town of 80,000 people. It's not 13 million people. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty fantastic to walk down to the brewery at 11 and see a line of 200 people waiting for your beer. That's pretty fantastic in a town like Asheville. So we, you know, super humbled by it.
Okay, tap rooms. What kind of glassware do you guys have? Or do you care? Do you not care?
Well,
do you have a glassware program?
We used to have more of a glassware program. We were talking about it earlier. We used to serve our glassware in, you know, beautiful logoed glassware, but those tended to walk away. And certainly in our beginning stages, that was a really hard pill to swallow financially and morally.
Kind of ties into what I was saying. I kind of mentioned earlier about, like, we took this trip to Europe together before Burial, and that was a big part of just kind of what shaped our ideas of what the brewery was going to be like, what the tap room was going to be like. And it was really cool to go into different beer bars in Belgium. And, you know, I remember one occasion where the bartender actually apologized because she didn't have the proper glass for the beer that I ordered. And that basically meant the glass that had the logo of the brewery that I ordered. And, like, that was such a big deal to them that they had to apologize about it. So when we first opened, we were like, we kind of wanted to wrangle that concept, and we tried for a little while.
Yeah, about a year.
Apparently Europeans are less willing to slide your glass into their purse and walk off with it, though.
And then, so JT and Tim, as, like, the brewery guys, tell us, like, each a beer that has inspired you that you may not necessarily want to make, but a beer that you've been inspired by in your career.
Personally, going back to what Josh was talking about, Northeast IPAs earlier, I moved down to Asheville from Boston and kind of was just around when Trillium started making a big splash and all the other great New England breweries honing that style. And, you know, before I was a professional brewer, I was obviously a home brewer, as almost all professional brewers are, and that was one I was trying to perfect at home, and was it's a fickle beast getting that beer perfect. I still don't think that I have, but...
none of us do.
Yeah.
Plenty of time.
And Tim, yeah. What was one beer for you?
Well, as I kind of mentioned, I mean, Saison is kind of, or farmhouse ales in general, is the most inspiring thing for me as a brewer. The whole, there's such a romance to it in my mind. Just the concept of brewing a beer on a farm for the farm workers with the ingredients that you have available to you, not making like a commercial beer that's always the same, kind of embracing that concept of just use what you have and it is what it is, and it's going to change all the time. And that style, I mean, beers like Fantôme are good examples. They're like Brasserie Thierrez in France. Doug and I visited that.
Thierrier,
thank you.
We had him on the show.
Yeah, I saw that. I should have known how to say it.
Thierrier Extra, one of my favorite beers.
Oh, yeah, fantastic. And, you know,
Tim, we wouldn't know because our whole conversation with their head brewer was in... We? Yeah. And sign language. Because Tim and I didn't know a single French.
Doug and Jess, we're wrapping up the show. You guys, think of one question that you guys are asking each other now, because as you guys are growing a little bit, and I'm sure on your website and your Instagram, people can follow that. But, you know, what's a question that you guys are asking each other now about, you know, the direction of your brewery, you know, and what you guys are trying to do? I know Jess has that one.
Ooh, that's a big question. It's for us, it's always, again, like reaching kind of within, and what like is important to us is people. You know, the question, I feel like we've answered a lot of our questions, which is great. You know, one of the big ones, right, in this industry is, well, how big are you going to get? You know, like, well, the demand is there. Are you going to expand again? Are you going to expand again? And for us personally, and we've always felt this way, we wanted two locations. We wanted to get to a certain barrelage a year, and we wanted to stop expanding. And we wanted to start investing within instead of investing out to constantly expand. And that's something that's incredibly important to us, is that we want to do what we love to do. We want to work with these amazing people that we work with, and we want them to love what they do, and kind of, you know, go on a vacation once a year and maybe put the kids through college, that kind of stuff, you know, but all the while doing something we're all passionate about. So
great. Josh, you have a last question for anybody?
You just put me on the spot, Jimmy.
That's the name of the game, I'm pretty sure.
Come on, journalist.
Come on, Josh.
Come on, journalist. Think of a question in the next 0.2 seconds.
Asheville.
For you guys, you know, what is it about New York City that you guys love? What, when you come here, you know, beer, of course, is a big part of the visit right now, but what's one thing you guys love doing when you come to town that's just not beer-focused or even food-focused? What is it about the city?
I mean, we have to mention the art, right? Because it's such a big part of Burial. Like, Jess and I were just talking about this in the cab from the airport. Like, let's go to a museum while we're here. Art has always been a big inspiration to us. If you've seen our cans, it's something we hope is quite obvious that we put a lot of time and effort
into. Could you describe them briefly? They're,
Well, we work with this really amazing illustrator, David Paul Seymour, and we found out about him through music, basically. He does a lot of album covers and concert posters and stuff like that. He has this really cool like combination of a little bit morbid, which ties in with our name, but also very psychedelic, which we've always kind of loved. A lot of the art that inspired us from Europe is actually quite psychedelic in a lot of ways and dark. So we kind of embrace that, and it's just a big part of who we are, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'll say thank you guys for coming on.
Oh,
we're gonna
thank
have to
you
wrap
so
it up.
Much.
Right now we're rushing over to what bar are you guys at tonight?
Haymaker.
We're rushing so fast right now.
Rush over there.
Oh my gosh, it starts in an hour.
It starts in an hour. Oh my gosh, you guys better hurry.
Everybody, give it a quick, say your names one more time and your role. So
Jessica Reeser, co-owner.
Doug Reeser, co-owner.
Burial Brewer, yeah.
Tim Gormley, head brewer.
JT Moret, head production brewer.
Josh Bernstein, journalist and author with the time to get off in the middle
right,
of the day.
And the Burial events are tonight, Haymaker with Other Half, Wednesday, Tours Thursday at 3s, and Friday, Proletariat with Transmitter. And our event's coming up, New York City Brewer's Choice, March 1st for Beer Week. Check it out, NewYorkCityBrewersChoice.com. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors for bringing these cans of Kolsch to us today in the studio. Thanks again to Jess, Doug, Tim, JT, and Josh for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producer, Justin Kennedy, and engineer, David Tadashore. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Woo!
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.